Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have with me Sandra Ann Taylor, who is the author of The Hidden Power of Your Past Lives, Revealing Your Encoded Consciousness. She is also the author of Quantum Success and Truth, Triumph, and Transformation, and is the host of a popular radio show, Living Your Quantum Success, on Hay House Radio. And for more than 25 years, Sandra's been working as a counselor in a private psychology practice and working with a lot of different spiritual topics, including past life regression. Today we're going to have an interesting discussion about those of us who are ready to look at our past lives. Welcome, Sandra. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure.
So, your career as a therapist has led you to understand that there may be some things coming in from other times and other lives. Is that correct?
Yeah, actually, I was interested in past life stuff for myself, but I was also in my psychological practice. I was doing hypnosis for people who had memory loss, and just kind of doing some regression into their childhood, mm-hmm. you know, if they oftentimes, and you know it's not always true, but oftentimes when there's memory loss up to the age of 9, 10, 11, 12, there's something traumatic that has happened that they've tried to wipe clean. And so we use regression to see if they can retrieve some of that information to heal it. And I had a number of cases where they spontaneously regressed into past life stuff, and it just, you know, blew the whole lid on what affects our present life destiny in terms of your energy, your emotional content, the conclusions we bring forward, and all that kind of interesting stuff.
Yeah, the first time I experienced this was actually in front of a whole room full of people. I mean, it was like an auditorium.
Oh.
Of clinical psychologists, and one of my friends had found that I'm extremely hypnotizable, so they hypnotized me, and I spontaneously started speaking French, which I do not know how to speak.
Wow.
So that was a past life. I was a monk, in a male monk, and was speaking French, which was interesting.
That does not surprise me at all.
Yeah,
that doesn't surprise
me.
So much comes through, and it there might have been something going on in your life at that time that mm-hmm. signaled back to that life as the French monk.
Right. I think there was. I think I was at Cassicorn when they herded. I think I was out in the field, and they herded. Or out in the countryside doing work, and I think they herded everybody into the church and set the church on fire. I think that was the traumatic event I was going back to, because I think that's an historical event. And I actually went to Cassicorn earlier in my life. I had no idea of even past life existed at that time. I didn't really know much about it, but it's interesting that you're led to the places that might have been very traumatic in previous lives.
It's absolutely
probably to release
true.
The energy.
Yeah, you're drawn
mm-hmm.
to certain places, and you don't even realize
mm-hmm.
why. It seems kind
yep.
of random and spontaneous. You're on a trip with friends or whatever, and there's a side trip, and someone says, oh, let's go here, and you go,
mm-hmm.
and you don't realize until much later that that was an influential life for you.
Yeah, I think right now, especially, many of us are trying to release negative things that happened in the past that really traumatized us. So if we were murdered, or if we saw a bunch of our friends and families murdered, or you know, really, really traumatic stuff is I think it's coming up. And I think the huge surge in panic attacks has something to do with this. I really do.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. It's so much evidence that phobias, anxiety conditions, depression,
mm-hmm.
and even obsessive-compulsive disorder can be traced back to past life stuff. But especially phobias, especially if there was some sort of traumatic injury, death, or the death of a loved one in something that is related to what you're fearful of now.
Yeah, you know, as a surgeon, we often order MRIs, and you might know that until recently there weren't open MRIs, so we had to deal with the claustrophobic. Well, I think many of the claustrophobics were buried alive. And
I agree,
you know,
and I've seen that. I have seen that in my work, and some claustrophobics had past lifetimes of, like, working in mines and silver mines and copper mines and coal mines and that type of thing, and often died in that work or hated that work. So, you know, this stuff, what people need to realize is that the more emotionally charged an experience, the more it becomes a part of our code, our consciousness code. When we carry that consciousness from lifetime to lifetime, and then you wonder, well, why I wasn't locked in a closet when I was a kid. Why the heck am I afraid of closed places now?
Yeah, I don't like ocean water at all. Like, I'll swim in a lake, I'll swim in a pool, but oceans, you know, I just don't like. And one time, two of my friends and I were doing some past life stuff, and it was amazing how many times I drowned in the ocean. It was just amazing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I've been on a cruise in this lifetime, you know. Forget it. Not going there.
No way is that happening. But I have to tell you, as soon as you started talking about ocean water, I saw you. I do a lot of past life readings, and I saw you on this, what they call the big ships with the great sails and stuff, and in a storm and it going down. And yes, I believe there were several events where you passed in some sort of ocean
That's
experience.
Correct.
And
I don't want to do that again.
No, you don't. And, you know, that's the thing. We don't have to, if it doesn't affect our lives, it's not something that is necessarily, you know, something that we have to approach and say, oh, I've got to heal this. I mean, obviously, if you wanted to go on a cruise, or if you were married to someone who had to live by the ocean or something like that would be a different thing. But it's not necessarily something we have to address.
That's true. I was always just amazed. I stayed with this triathlon person on the Big Island who was actually out swimming with the sharks. I mean, the sharks were in the water. They were swimming. And I was going, well, how do you deal with that? And she says, oh, I just try not to look like a fish. I guess you can paddle, you know, you can paddle a certain way and swim a certain way so you look like a fish. And that could be dangerous during shark feeding time.
I think
so. I mean,
so.
You know, people
so.
Go out and swim in shark-infested water. Well, I mean, not shark-infested, but potentially shark waters, you know, all
oh,
the time.
Sure. It's all what they get used to, you know. It's,
exactly.
It's the familiarity. It's like living in L.A. Some people wouldn't consider living in a place where they had regular earthquakes, but a lot of I have a lot of friends in L.A., and you know, they just, you know, oh, it's only a four. Let's go about their day.
Right. Nothing to worry about. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it is interesting. And there, like, the common things, like claustrophobia, fear of heights, you know, just the common ways people die. And those are the common phobias.
Yeah.
So it does make sense.
I have my friend Lisa Williams, who's a psychic, has a significant fear of fire. And when she speaks, she always, the first thing she does is check the fire exit, and is there a fire, you know.
Know how to get out.
Exit and fire stairs and that type of thing. And she clearly had a past life where she died in a fire.
Yeah.
So
and maybe it was preventable if she'd known.
What?
Yeah. It might have been preventable. She might have been shown after that life that had she known the way out, she could have lived, too. I mean,
right,
there might have been another
thing
to that she need, you know, that now she's so cautious because, you know, there are things you can do to prevent problems even if they do occur, you know, if you're knowledgeable.
And that's where finding out about your past life stuff, it's an interesting thing, but it has more a therapeutic purpose when it helps to alleviate the fear. And I don't do just regression and readings to find out. What we do when we find out is something that I call rescripting. Let's rewrite that script and create a different code around it. So you can see yourself, instead of being burned alive or not realizing you had the option to go out the back door or something, you rewrite it and you change mm-hmm. the whole energy around it, which shifts your consciousness both in that past energy and in your present approach to it. And people have had amazing recoveries from phobias and depressions and even physical problems.
Oh, yeah, that's true. In fact, I've interviewed a few doctors who have used past life therapy to cure some pretty significant physical problems and written books on it. So it is
yeah,
true.
It's amazing how powerful it can be. It really, really is so liberating. And, it's just not kind of in our Western mentality to be open to this. But I think more mm-hmm. and more doctors are, more and more people in the mainstream are becoming open because they can see how it might be the missing piece in the big jigsaw puzzle of mm-hmm. healing and destiny creation.
One of your chapters is Back in the Saddle Again and Again. It reminds me of a newspaper article I saw. It happened in France. They said this baby was born in France. And as it came out, and this wasn't in the National Enquirer, by the way, this was in mainstream media. Anyway, this baby came out and was being born, and in front of a bunch of witnesses in the delivery room said, "Oh, no, not again," and then didn't speak again until they were about three.
So, oh, yes, I'm sure as children, as babies, we have that experience.
Oh,
but,
no, not again.
I think that we're driven back not only by what's called karma, and karma is a weird word for some people. They assume it means punishment, but it doesn't mean that at mm-hmm. all. It just means the accumulation of a certain type of energy. But I think our souls are driven back by our desire to experience things and our attachments to people and activities and experiences and unfinished business. So on the one hand, yes, I think that a lot of us feel, oh, not again. But on the other hand, I feel that there might be an inner drive that moves us forward and keeps us coming back. And then, of course, there's the purpose of service. And the Dalai Lama says that as long as one human being is alive on the earth and suffering, the enlightened soul is willing to come back to help.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and it seems that we probably reincarnate in groups
absolutely.
For certain purposes so that when certain things need to happen, we agree to come back and then we help each other out with a larger mission. Probably you and I are of a similar soul group in that we are, pushing the boundaries of spirituality, really into mainstream now. I mean, Hay House has done a lot to, push into, past just the metaphysical community, and it's mm-hmm. much more mainstream than it ever has been.
Yeah, and I think that there's a large group of us that have been born at this time to promote an accelerated kind of enlightenment, an accelerated mm-hmm. initiation, so to speak. And what I have found a lot in my clients and the people that I work with, a lot of people, a lot of us who work in this field and people who are just interested in this field are coming back with past lives of maybe persecution for their spiritual practices and their mm-hmm. their desire to break free from that code of fearing it and wanting to spread it and feeling safe and empowered in so doing is like a shared consciousness, a shared karma of a very large group around the planet.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And there are quite a few that have been have known that they spent lifetimes in religious orders and more of a cloistered life in the past and developed a great deal. I mean, if you spend your whole life concentrating on spirituality, then you do develop. But now we're not in cloisters. We're not on the mountaintops. I was guided to be a plastic surgeon. You were guided to be a psychologist. I mean, we're in the world doing the work.
That's right. And the interesting thing is, and I've seen this with people who have led cloistered lives and and felt that that was the way to get close to God, is that a lot of these people come back and they lead very isolated lives, and they wonder, why mm-hmm. can't I find a significant other? Why do I not have a lot of friends? And when we do a past life regression or a reading or something, get the information, we often find that they made some sort of commitment to, or the conclusion of, that it's the only way to stay close to God is through my isolation. It's the mm-hmm. only way to be spiritual is through my isolation. And that may have been true in another life, or it may have been helpful in another life, but we don't have mm-hmm. to carry these codes with us any longer. And we can see, as you said, you know, you're a dermatologist, I'm a psychologist, there are lots of us working in the world, and you can certainly become just as spiritual and just as close to God in a very broad spectrum of society as you can by being a hermit. And you don't have right. to stay coded into that intention to be a hermit any longer.
Yeah, I think, you know, many of us in this work have really not come to have long-term relationships either, you know, like 50 or 60-year relationships. Instead, we go through serial relationships, you know,
yes.
one and then another, because we seem to be going through a lot of different karmic closures with people. You know, so
right, I believe that. And
karmic
as
repetition.
You said,
you know?
Right, and repetition is one of the three major elements of karma. There's repetition, retribution, and compensation. And mm-hmm. the repetition that we have with our partners, so we can get finished with that, or the retribution. So, and that sounds like payback, mm-hmm. but it's really a return, a retribute, a return of the energy that you put in. And what that
right.
indicates is that if you were a brutal husband in a past life, you may come back be the wife of a brutal husband in this life. And I've had clients that have gone back and forth and back and forth in these.
Mm-hmm.
parental and child role reversals and husband and wife role reversals, and just kind of locked into this repetition of, you know, kind of brutality or dismissal, and somebody, one person, has to choose to learn the lesson and shift the energy of that relationship before it's going to change then.
Right. So, we may have a lot of different lessons that are a lot shorter. You know, you come in, you're taught, you know, you're going to get married, you're going to have children, you're going to stay with that person, you know, until death do you part. But that's just not what's going on now. And so people shouldn't really feel bad about what is happening. I mean, you know, some people probably have life partners, but a lot of us have different assignments, and you
oh,
get
yeah.
one, done with one and you go on to the next one.
And you're working out, you know, whether you have a life partner for 50 years or, you know, like me and you're on your third marriage, you're working out a lot of the karma, you know, and there is a finishing of, if there is an intention to finish it, you know, if at least
mm-hmm.
one person has the intention to learn from it, to move on to a more enlightened and a higher integrity of vibration, then it served its purpose.
Mm-hmm. Well, in your in chapter 7, you talked about the six karmic causes,
mm-hmm.
With desire being the first one. And I do think it is desire that brings us back into the third dimension. I think it is. You've got a great chapter here of what your soul wants to express and learn and grow and connect and experience. And I guess when we would know that, because like when we see a breathtaking sunset or a little rabbit jumping across the road, you know, with a leaf in his mouth or something, just those experiences bring such joy. And
they do.
You know, chances are those are some of the moments we come back for. You know, just the little things.
I really believe that, and I believe that there is that deep sense of appreciation is a driving force in our decision to incarnate again. And I feel that part of this shared economic karma that we're going through is to get us back to some of the simpler sensations of appreciation. You know, I am crazy about flowers and bunnies and the just what you were talking about, sunsets,
yeah,
all that type of thing. It sounds so cliche and so old-fashioned, but, you know, I have a magnolia outside my front door, and I cannot pass it when it's in bloom without stopping and smelling it and thanking the universe. And I think when we live in this simple appreciation, we go into a vibration of soul appreciation. In other words, our soul is like, oh yeah, there's a recognition there. This is the beauty of this. And it's not like the soul cannot perceive beauty in the energetic realm. It's just that there's, you know, a lot of different elements and very vibrant kind of energies of experiencing and perceiving beauty and joy and pleasure of all sorts in the physical realm.
Yeah, and the purposes of the manifested worlds, according to some of the masters, is ananda, which is translated into enjoyment. And I think that that is very, very profound. I think we forget that we come here to enjoy this world. And when we're not enjoying it, we're not on our soul's purpose. We're off the mark.
I agree. And there's such a common, you know, there, especially in the United States, there's just a very common thread of attaching enjoyment and pleasure to having a lot of acquisition, you know, having a lot of things, having a lot of money, having, you know, being able to go first class everywhere and having the fanciest cars and stuff. But we really have to find the enjoyment within ourselves and within our lives to get to that soul recognition. And part of us have that life lesson. And even in our relationships, you know, people think that another person is going to make them happy. And if you think that way, you move into what I call the law of paradoxical intent. What?
You're going to be disappointed.
Yes, you're definitely going to be disappointed.
That way.
And when we believe something or someone is going to make us happy, it makes us desperate to get it. And the law of paradoxical intent says that the more desperate you are to achieve something, the more your toxic energy creates the paradox or the opposite of your intention. And so we actually then encode a deeper karma of longing. And so, you know, we come back and we long for you know, a man to make us happy, and our refusal to choose to make ourselves happy actually tells the universe that, you know, don't bother sending me any love because I'm not capable of truly being happy. So it's just, you know, it's such a complexity of thought and vibration and intention that leads us through the various elements of our life. And when we awaken to all of these aspects, including our past life influences, then we can really break through and, you know, get the things that we want to have happen.
Now, the second karmic cause is growth and learning. Obviously, we do come back to do different things and to learn different things. And that is, would you like to say something about that karmic cause?
The soul longs to learn and to grow and to connect, to share, to express. All of these things are parts of the soul's desire, and growth and learning in terms of moving on to a deeper understanding of things, of realization of what is important, prioritizing. Learning self-love is a big life lesson because a lot of us aren't taught that by our parents, and so we have to choose to learn self-love. Learning compassion for others is another life lesson. There are a lot of things that the soul longs for us to learn in our heart of hearts, and when we get it, we can be done. You know, we can be born to critical parents lifetime after lifetime, and if we don't choose to let that go and stop being critical of ourselves and learn how to really embrace ourselves and love our true identity, which is our spiritual source and our divine legacy, and see the value and the power within, when we get that in a heart-centered kind of way, then we're done with the lesson. You don't have to do a karmic repetition of everything that you've ever put out there. When you learn the lesson, you are done with having to go through the difficulties.
So that brings us to karmic repetition, which is number three.
And that's actually a very, very common thing. Addictions are often based in karmic repetition. People who are alcoholics have often been alcoholics in the past. People who, have relationships have had those same relationships in the past. Sometimes they were opposite, and that moves into retribution, but they were opposite in terms of giving and getting energy, but have been with the same people. Sometimes they're just the same energy over and over. I had a client who was very submissive, very critical husband, very domineering. She never learned how to stand up for herself in past lives, and her soul just kept bringing her back to the same person, the same energy, the same activity, until she learned how to break free and speak her truth and live in her truth and stand up for herself. And, she shifted lifetimes worth of repeated energy.
And sometimes these things become genetic. I think that there's, when patterns occur again and again and again and don't break, then they can become genetic. And we all know about the genetic predisposition for becoming alcoholic.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. There are, and you know what, that's the thing that is interesting about our karmic code. It actually becomes a cellular memory. Even though we don't take our physical cells with us into the next life, we take our auric memory, we take our cellular memory. So I've had so many people say, oh, I had surgery in this part of my body, and then, you know, we would find out that that leg was amputated or whatever, there's so much that is stored in the cellular memory, even though we don't take the actual cells with us. It's just the memory that carries that forward. And indeed, the alcoholism, the release of those neuropeptides that are involved, that chemical, stimulus response kind of thing, absolutely can be recorded in the cellular memory of the consciousness code.
And they've also discovered that when you were traumatically injured, like with spears or even shot or whatever, you often have a birthmark in the entry point.
Absolutely. Birthmarks and scars are definitely signs of previous injury. They're very common.
And that makes
That's
sense
a very
because
common
they're,
thing.
Yeah, that area in the blueprint, which is actually transferred. I mean, the blueprint does not exist in the physical. The blueprint's in the etheric or in the higher template. So when there's something there in the etheric, then it can be transferred. You know, that it can be transferred as a something different. And
Absolutely.
Maybe allowed something else to form there that wouldn't have normally been there. So it is interesting how we really have to heal these past life tragedies too. I mean that really is coming up a lot. A lot of the work we do in our lifetimes is to heal the trauma from before.
And people wonder, well, why you always talk about how you died or how that, negative, difficult relationship influenced. Why, people say, well, why is there so much violence and trauma in our past lives? Well, most of us have also had idyllic lives, and we bring some of that energy with us, but it's the difficulty that stays with us, the injury, being crushed in a chariot case, Chase,
in
ancient Rome, could cause arthritis in your legs in the present day.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? So it's not that we only have trauma. It's that, again, the more highly charged the experience and the situation, mm-hmm. the more it's going to code itself in your cellular memory, in your consciousness, in your intentions and your conclusions.
And you know, when you do take people back through hypnosis, they go back to a lifetime that's important to look at. And usually, I mean, 9 times out of 10, there's something going on in that lifetime that's fairly negative. They go right back to, I mean, that's where they go to. They go to something that they need to, they don't go back and just say, oh, you know, I lived a wonderful life and, you know, nothing significant happened. I never heard that when I do the past life regressions. It's like, no.
No.
And here we are. Pushed off a cliff again, you know.
it's partially because we're focusing on what we need to heal in this life.
You know,
if you want to just do random regressions and see... You know, you might find some of those things. You're floating on a boat, or whatever. But if you want to heal something, your intention actually draws you to that past life in the regression.
Yeah, it does. It's very interesting. Okay, the next one is karmic compensation.
Well, that is the element of karma where you compensate for something. So if you starve to death in the potato famine and you were hungry all of the time, you might overeat in this life, and no matter how much you get to eat, you could still feel hungry and have a considerable weight problem. So it's actually an overreaction to usually some sort of extreme. If we have a moderate condition, we don't overcompensate. But so it's usually an overreaction to some sort of extreme experience. And I had a woman who was at one of my seminars, and she asked about the karmic source of fertility problems. And what we found out was that she had a past life as a pioneer woman, and she had like 8 kids under the age of 10, and she was, you know, just constantly working, and the kids were crying, and she felt like a terrible mother, but she resented the exhaustion, and she was carrying water from the stream to the little house on the prairie or whatever. And so she actually coded that, you know, I can't have any more kids, you know, and I don't want to have sex with my husband anymore. I can't do this. Mm-hmm. And so she brought that code into this lifetime, that intention. I can't have any more kids. What we were able to do is we created some releasing affirmations. We did some rescripting, and we worked on doing some very tangible higher intentions for this life. And she was able to have a beautiful baby boy in spite of having only one ovary.
Yeah. Well,
it's deeply held things can really create, you know, very difficult aspects of your life. And it could just be compensating for some sort of misery in a past life.
Yeah, there's actually a paper out saying that spiritual healing is more effective than any other means of fertility work.
And I believe
it's true. I mean, I've been asked by several people to do healings, and it's always something in the past life, and it's always something pretty bad, you know, dying in childbirth, or, you know, some equally traumatic event, or having a child die and have horrible grief. If you can release that energy, they get pregnant pretty quickly. In fact, one I did a healing on, actually in a big group healing I was doing down at DeKalb Medical Center. I was teaching people how to heal, and we were all divided up in groups. And this one person had spent 7 years trying to get pregnant, and she told me later she got pregnant that night. You know, she had a child that night. Okay. So, but
now that is an immediate karmic reversal.
Oh, yeah. It was incredible. But I just couldn't believe all the energy that was released during that healing. It was like, but so spiritual healing is actually a lot cheaper and probably a lot safer than IVF. You know, it's certainly less expensive at $10,000 a pop for IVF that may or may not work. And I think that's something that, unless you absolutely know you can't get pregnant, you know, because of certain factors, you know, that IVF gets around.
Yeah, right.
But otherwise, it's a lot cheaper, and according to the studies, it works really well. And that's why, because karmic encoding or karmic...
Yeah,
It's encoding, okay, encoding
right.
That this is dangerous. Getting pregnant is dangerous.
Yeah.
Or having children is not a good idea. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay,
and make all sorts of conclusions about things being unsafe, things being creating sadness, things being, a lot of women have been abandoned and neglected and said and have coded that it's not safe to love. And now they come into this life, why can't I find someone to love?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that can be released. It can totally shift.
Yeah. See, a lot of them turn and become lesbians too. You know, it's
woman who kept saying, "I can't have sex with my husband," did become a lesbian, but she still wanted a child. She didn't want to heal or change her sexual preference, but she definitely wanted a family.
Yeah.
So she was able to do what she chose to do once she realized the source of it.
Yeah. Okay. The next one is karmic retribution.
Right. And that is where, in order to learn the energy of what we've put out, we come back and experience the same kind of energy that we've put out. So if we've been, it's not punishment, although the word retribution, and by the way, these three elements of the six, I studied, you know, karma back with the Casey Institute 30 years ago, and they teach repetition, compensation, and retribution. And so I kept their word, but it's not, I don't perceive it as punishment. I perceive it as a return of your energy. So if you're critical, your soul might go through that life being critical, and your personality is critical, and you might look back on that life and say, well, now I need to know what that feels like. And so you come back with the person that you criticize, and they get to be the critical one. And as I said before, this happens a lot in marriages and a lot in parent-child relationships. And it's very important to know if we've been victimized either by a spouse or abused by a parent. We need to take responsibility for our healing and our wholeness and releasing the attachment and resentment to that past so that we can move forward and not have to come back and do it again. Because a lot of times the resentment codes like, oh, I wish I could show him and I wish I could do, you know, and then we actually come back and you know, kind of give them the same treatment. And it maybe what we wanted in the previous life, but we're just getting deeper into that code. It becomes so deep the more we repeat it. It becomes harder and harder to break away, but it's never impossible to break away. So we need to know that we have options. And like I said, once we're in an awareness of how our relationship is going, whether it's as a child, a parent, or a spouse, or a lover, or whatever, we need to bring honoring and integrity, compassion for ourselves and others, and just say, okay, what do I need to do to change this pattern for myself? Now, if you cannot change the other person, you cannot force another person to change, but it's part of our karmic lesson, our soul lesson, to make choices that honor us. And sometimes the choice that honors us is to leave the relationship. So many people use the term karmic relationship as a sign that we're destined to spend the rest of this life together. And you know, sometimes the karma in a relationship is to learn how to leave it.
It's
very important to realize
that's
the honoring is the important piece of it.
When when I was reading an article on bullying, it became clear to me that this was what was going on in bullying. They actually did a study on it and showed that people who were bullied were very, very likely to be bullies. And that's not something I would have known. I mean, I would have predicted. It would after I read your book, but not before. So,
evidently, can be a past life.
That's a dance. You know, that's another dance. And it's it's getting a lot of national press now.
Yeah, you know, and it's the same thing with, you know, people who were sexually abused as children are likely to grow up and become, are more likely, not everyone is likely, but are in terms of ratio and percentage, are more likely to grow up and be sexual abusers than people who were treating with nurturing, honoring kind of behavior from their parents. It's the, you know, it's seated in past life. When you have something that traumatic, severe bullying, physical abuse, sexual abuse, you can almost guarantee there's a seed of that in a past life.
Right, right. So a lot of the forgiveness work that needs to be done is actually part of the forgiveness is forgiving yourself for doing that to people in previous lives.
Absolutely. And you can't freak out about having done it, you know. I do this work with people and I talk about abuse and they think that, oh, I was so horrible. And, you know, we have to realize that, you know, we did the best that we could do given our psyche, our culture, our family, our upbringing, all of the influences of the time. I mean, a lot of history had a lot of brutality, you know, from the Dark Ages through the Middle Ages. And beyond, there are were times in history when people would just as soon kill you as look at you.
Right, yeah. And
so,
slavery,
I mean, you have to realize that you're a product of the culture.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, so, but I get the feeling, too, like with a lot of the more radical movements, like the radical feminism and the radical, like the Black Panthers and the anything that's real radical, I always kind of saw them as playing between like the slave owners and the Black Panthers, you see, going back and forth. You know, in some lifetimes they were slave owners and others they were rebellious Black people, you know, or going back and forth from the extremes.
I agree.
Feminists might have been the you know, the arrogant white male that looked down on women. Or everybody that wasn't a white male, you know, it's not just women. So, you know, you go through, and that's why Buddha said that the path to enlightenment is the middle road.
That's right.
You got to get into the
goal.
You know, you can't keep coming back as this fringe element.
Right, right. And finding the middle road is a part of what the soul seeks in terms of personal balance. You know, there's a balance and a delight and peace that comes from not having to have power in a certain way. You know, whether it's compensating for not having enough power or giving up your power or just bouncing back from those extremes. You don't have to have fraudulent power. It's having authentic power, and that's part of a life lesson as well.
Right. And I think it's a shame that more isn't taught in our school system or our religious school system, it doesn't really matter which one, about these relationships and how we come back. And because I think we could understand a lot more if we knew the bigger picture across time that happens, and I think we'd be a lot more forgiving, you know,
and even
a lot more forgiving
agree.
Of incest. You know, you look on incest and say, oh, that's horrible, but you know, if you were in love with the same person lifetime after lifetime after lifetime and then found yourself in the same family with them as brother and sister, you know, you can sort of understand, like, socially it may, and you know, ethically it might not be a real good idea, but you can at least understand why there would be an attraction there.
Now, there's a clarity that comes. You know, I have so many people say, I don't understand why they did that, or I did this, or why mm-hmm. do they hate me? And then when we get into what the past life was, the clarity goes, oh, yeah, that's the only thing that makes sense. And it really, and even if the dynamics of the relationship don't change, the understanding of why it happened or what could be a source of it in a past mm-hmm. life helps one to deal with whatever aspect they need to deal with. Of course, in situations of sexual abuse, there has to be some sort of therapeutic model around that, no
sure.
matter where mm-hmm. it was seated, because it can be very, to most people, to, you know, and I won't make a blanket statement, but, you know, can be disempowering in terms of your sense of safety and that type of thing. So there mm-hmm. is, as much as a difficult as it is, yes, there is an explanation in a past life, and there is also an opportunity to learn something about your own safety, about your choice for safety, about your eternal life, about your soul's power to rise above these kind of difficulties. There's all sorts of issues that can be laced through these kind of experiences, and even the most difficult problem has an opportunity, you know, in its hands.
Right, it does. And also just accessing your own inner guidance to get out of a problem. I mean,
that's
why I tell people that there's always the answer. You just have to, you know, be still and figure out what it is. You know,
it's absolutely,
or pray
there.
About it and ask for help and get help, you know.
And the reality is that, you know, our soul, our eternal identity pre-existed all of this stuff. It goes back to
mm-hmm.
divine consciousness. And because we pre-existed all this stuff, the answer is within us. The answer is within our soul consciousness. And it absolutely
mm-hmm.
can achieve miraculous healing and resolution of whatever problem may seem, you know, insurmountable in this life, that the eternity and the wisdom and the love and the power of your soul has the ability, because it pre-existed all this stuff. It comes from divine source, and that is a solution in and of itself.
And you can also go into future lives if you need to get information
yeah.
to help you.
Right.
So, you know, you're not just bound by what was past. You have really, the soul being eternal can go either direction, which is
it
helpful
can.
Sometimes.
And that's why in my book I have a free CD that has a regression, a rescripting,
mm-hmm.
and affirmations of release and past life release and present life intentions. And there's a future life progression to see what
mm-hmm.
may be down the road related to something that you might be going through now.
Yeah, I didn't have time to do that because we're pre-recording this, but I plan to do it. I think it'll be good.
Well, you'll have to tell me what you get.
There you go. Well, number six is service, and I think that this is, especially during this time, many of the light workers anyway are coming back for service. In other words, we came back at a predestined time with a mission that was fairly well-defined. In order to be of service to humanity.
I agree, and the service can be great or small. This, you know, it can be everyday service to the people around us and in our families. It can be everyday service to just the universe, creating an intention of love and an expansion of love. And it can be, as you said, trying to accelerate and expand the consciousness and the awareness of the people on the planet. Now, if you study quantum physics and physics in general, you'll find that there are fields of consciousness. Rupert Sheldrake called them morphogenetic fields. And these
mm-hmm.
fields of consciousness are expanded by our individual choices. And so what we have to understand is that every time I look in the mirror and say, gee, I hate my hair, I hate my life, I've got to lose weight,
mm-hmm.
whatever, I'm feeding the field of hate and fear. And when I can do something positive for myself, or say or think something positive to or for myself or others, then what happens is I feed the field of love. And that expands. And the more of us who intentionally, in addition to us teaching what we know and trying to get the message out there, the more we bring that into the individual's lives and we help people with their own lesson of self-love and compassion for others, the more that field expands. And then that changed that changes the destiny of all mankind.
Yeah, I wrote a book called The Naked Truth About Breast Implants, and in it, there's a concept that came to me, which I think is really true. Whenever there's going to be a significant problem, at the time that that is forming, they also form the solution. Consciousness forms the solution. So therefore, I was spiritually guided to get breast implants when I was in the military, and they were free. And I was guided to get Dow Corning silicone gel breast implants. Thank goodness, because I got $25,000 out of the settlement. But anyway, any other brand, I wouldn't have gotten that. See, you pays to listen. And then 9 years later, one of my implants leaked just on one side. So it was real clear to me what was going on. And as a plastic surgeon, I was treating other women with similar problems. And then I had to treat myself, of course, because of the chemical and biotoxicity. And this was a disease that medical science was going to vehemently deny existed. And, and I had to come up with the protocols and the surgical protocols and the holistic protocols to get people better. And you may have heard of the PIP implant disaster, in Europe.
Yes.
But it's not much better here when the implants start to leak and rupture. The chemicals cause the same problems. They're neurotoxins and carcinogens, and women get deathly ill, and their doctors say it's not their implants, and those who just follow blindly will go ahead and usually have a shortened lifespan or get cancer or commit suicide. All of that's peer-reviewed literature backed. And those of them who are more spiritually guided get on the internet, find my book, find me, come here, get well, or get much better. And sometimes we can't get them totally well because of the extent of the poisoning. But that service, but I had to follow a particular path to do that. Had I not gotten implants when guided to, I could not have done my mission, if you think about it.
And
so it's guidance
so
all along the way.
Yeah, it's so true for a lot of our difficulties. They lead us to a much more enlightened and more fulfilling path. And so, as hard as it was for you to deal with that experience and it leaking and everything, the solution you came up with for yourself and for what you had to do for yourself had to be enormously fulfilling once you were able to teach it to others and bring the healing to others. And that's just a part of the service. There is a solution that is formed, and part of our service is finding that solution and moving it into a larger perspective of things.
That's true. So it's very important to follow your guidance. That's what it comes down to.
It is.
Very important.
And that's another life lesson. So the big life lessons are following your intuition, following your guidance, learning how to love yourself and honor yourself in your self-talk and your treatment, learning compassion for others, speaking your truth. These are the things that our soul, if these things are unfinished, our soul longs for us to finish them so that we can move into the broader experience of humankind and bring the healing that we have done for ourselves to other people. Once we get that, we have a whole different consciousness, and life is a different experience, and we bring that different experience to the energies of the morphogenetic fields of all the people on the planet without even knowing it.
And one of the other ones that I know is in your book is very important, and a lot of people are learning that now, is not to worry about what other people think of you. And it comes to mind, there's a quote saying, "What others think of me is none of my business."
Yes.
Which is interesting.
Yes, it is. That's actually the that comes from the title of the Terry Cole Whittaker book, which is wonderful, by the way. It's called What You Think of Me Is None of My Business, and she wrote that
there you go.
25 years ago, at least. And that's true. And we make, when we make it our business, we make it, we shift our priorities from self-actualization to other people's priorities and performance and the need for approval and all sorts of stuff that get us off of our path. And the purpose is to stay on path and stay in self-love and release all that craziness.
Right. Well, we're coming up to the end of the hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Sure. My website is sandrataylor.com or .net, and that's the best way to reach me. And I also have a radio show on Hay House every Monday at 1 o'clock at hayhouseradio.com. It's called Living Your Quantum Success, and I do energy readings and talk about all of the things we're talking about, plus all of the forces of consciousness creation and that type of thing. So definitely get in touch with me at sandrataylor.com.
Well, I certainly enjoyed your book. We only went through a couple of chapters. There's much more in here, including getting to know your guides and your past life guides and rewriting your code and deconstructing misery, reconstructing joy, some of the chapter titles. And I would highly recommend it for anybody on their spiritual path who is now ready to look at their past lives.
Well, thank you so much. That means so much to me.
Well, great. This is Dr. Susan Kolb. We've been interviewing Sandra Ann Taylor, The Hidden Power of Your Past Lives, Revealing Your Encoded Consciousness. This book is special because it has a CD with some focused regression, future life progression, karmic healing affirmations, and releasing and rescripting the past, all of which are things that should be great adventures. Next week, we will be interviewing again Michael Murray, Why in the World Are They Spraying? This time rather than What in the World Are They Spraying? And on June 2nd, we'll be also re-interviewing Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum, Real Cause, Real Cures. On the 9th, Stephen Lewis will be with us with the AIM program. And on the 16th, we're changing a little bit. Nick Redfern is going to be talking about Keep Out, Top Secret Places Governments Don't Want You to Know About. I keep telling people this is a health show, but sometimes I verge from that. Noetic Science Meeting is on May 17th, which I guess is tomorrow. Dr. Brad Gould will be talking about light therapy at the Millennium Office at 7:30. And Millennium Healthcare Wellness Event, Dr. Greenberg will be talking on Tuesday, May 22nd, on curing food allergies. And then we will have Dr. John Turner for Noetic Science in June, talking about neuroscience. Anyway, thank you very much for joining us, and join us next week.